Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, August 4th, 2012. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. Our topic we have pre-advertised is, if you don't pass Glass-Steagall, you don't eat. Now, you can tell by this plain talk that we have an extremely serious situation, very urgent. And for this is, by the way, our first show of the month of August. But August is not at all pro forma, no dog days. In fact, we are in a very dangerous situation of the threat of the guns of August with the kind of games being played towards war in the cockpit of the Middle East, Southwest Asia. And we're also, however, in a very high-impact mobilization to stop, to lessen and stop the danger through taking the right emergency measures in Washington, D.C. This is not just a national matter, it's international. Now, let me just say on that, and then I'll introduce our guests, and then we'll jump right in, is that contrary to what you may have seen on your television headlines around August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Congress is not in recess. Yes, many of them are in their home districts. They for sure went home. But they, due to the tumult of the reality around our country concerning everything from no farm bill, an extraordinary drought, from no jobs, from the danger of Obama in the White House threatening to start a war or more crazy financial transatlantic attempted bailouts. All these things added together in tumult, but we've had a couple of weeks of intense mobilization from people all around the nation and in Washington that Congress should take the right emergency measures, beginning with Glass-Steagall and continuing on from there. So on Thursday, the 2nd, the House of Representatives soundly voted not to adjourn. It's over 250 to 150 congressmen voted not to adjourn. As I said, they may be in their home districts, and that makes them easier to reach in some ways on an emergency basis. But at any time, they can be called literally back into the halls of Congress. They can be literally ordered what to do. Now, we'll get to that in a minute, but to discuss the situation, I'm very glad that we have someone who's been on Capitol Hill and involved for the last couple of weeks in the thick of things in Washington from the LaRouche Political Action Committee. And that's, welcome, Brent Bedford. Hi.
Hi, glad to be here.
And Brent is has particular things that he's followed concerning also farming networks in the West, water networks, but we'll get to that. But what we have assembled a panel of three farm leaders, longtime farm leaders from the Midwest, and I'll introduce them now, beginning with the farthest west out in Nebraska in the Missouri River watershed in southeast Nebraska, Don Arrett. Welcome, Don.
Hi. Yep.
And from South Dakota, not too far away, but to the north there, we have Ron Wisorek, who's in southeast South Dakota. Welcome, Ron.
Hello, Marcia.
And likewise, you're, I think, in Davison County near Mitchell, if people know their map.
And yep, we're right along I-90.
Okay, and farther east in Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota, Andy Olson. Welcome, Andy.
Hi, Marcia.
Now, Andy, again, if you know your map, you know I think you're in the Des Moines watershed, which goes down through the state of Iowa into the Mississippi, right?
That's correct.
And the reason I'm being very physical, geographic-oriented here is one thing is that over 1,500 of our counties in out of 3,000 total, that's over 50%, are declared agriculture disaster areas right now. Now, 90% of that is from the drought, and they are, in Texas, California, but all over the place, but including the Corn Belt, the dry plains, and so forth. You have some other problems like the freeze in Michigan or something. But one thing that is making this clear, and I'm going to ask our farm panelists about this in a few seconds, The emergency situation I was referring to about emergency policy is the wildfires. We've seen headlines in the last 36 hours about, in particular, the state of Oklahoma, although it's not confined there. You have fires in Arkansas, you have fires in Kansas. But all counties of Oklahoma have a restriction on burning, I think in many other states too. But you have 12 significant fires there. You have parts of the population in Metro Tulsa who are threatened, Metro Oklahoma City who are threatened in Cleveland County. And this just underscores the point, this immediate national emergency in Oklahoma, that Congress should be back in Washington, and we're going to force, and we'll continue to force the issue of the Glass-Steagall being passed, then opening the door for the kind of credits we need for grants and loans and the long-term project that we should have had all along in the West, the North American Water and Power Alliance. And now we have the updated NWAPA 21 version. But right off the bat, I want our farmers from either firsthand experience or your observations on what gives rise. Naturally, it's drought and lack of soil moisture, but the scope and the nature of why we have this wildfire emergency out west. Ron, I think you there in the Dakotas had something to say about this.
Well, right now, August 3rd, which was the night before last, they had to evacuate a town on the reservation, the Rosebud Reservation here of 2,000 people because of wildfires on the Rosebud there. And Pine Ridge has had the same problem here. They had to move a community of 1,500. I don't know offhand how many homes burned, but the government has already announced that they're going to move in some of these mobile homes to make them available to the Native Americans out there. And, of course, I think you can all remember the fires in the Black Hills here just a couple weeks ago where they didn't we didn't even have any, airplanes to drop water out there, basically. And they had a plane crash, and we lost two pilots there from, I think they were from North Carolina or South Carolina, actually. And they even, they shut down the planes that we had here for a few days. So, I mean, the situation is almost like it's out of control here in western South Dakota. And thank God last night we had a little shower that moved across the state and, helped some with the fire there on the reservations in western South Dakota.
Right. And Don Arrett, who's in Nebraska, which has a lot of irrigation, it has various things, but you've been observing wildfires you didn't expect even in your own area, right?
Well, yeah, not right where I'm at, but up in northeast Nebraska, the Niobrara River Valley, and that's up close to where Ron's at too, I guess, had over a week of continually burning fires that they couldn't get out. And I think it was they have more pine tree involved there, which feeds the fires. But I guess those are now out. But now they just last night or now this morning they announced out in western Nebraska in Ogallala they had a 60,000 acre grass fire that was started by some farm equipment that probably set off the fire. And they didn't have the means to be putting that fire out. And I'm not sure exactly where they're at now with that one. And then we're hearing about Oklahoma to the south of us. So, and there I just heard that the governor had asked for help, and she cannot get any help from out of state because everybody else just reports back saying that they have their own problems to take care of. So that's the story, really, that I know about fires.
Right. Do you, from Andy, do you want to add anything to this?
Well, the drought in southwest Minnesota really started about a year ago, and we had very little rain. And in last fall's harvest, we were having problems with combine fires, and they would start the cornfield on fire in one particular hazardous day with about a 40-mile-an-hour wind. it did get into a town in northwest Iowa, and it almost got out of control here too, and it would have gone for miles, just jumping roads and hitting this tinder dry standing corn. So we can look forward to something like that if we don't get some real recharge, because the ground is very dry here.
Right. Well, what I want...
I just...
Go ahead.
Marcia?
Yes,
I was going to add that
Dakota.
I just... On Thursday, I just drove from Sioux Falls to Platte, South Dakota, which is, on the Minnesota-Iowa border, basically, to the Missouri River area, on Highway 44, and I would estimate the corn crop, and there was, by the way, there was a lot of cornfields that looked like November, there was no green left in at all, so the fire danger, in areas where a year ago it would have been grass green are now open for the potential for, that type of fire situation. And my estimation on that 150-mile drive was looking at the cornfields, I would say we'll be very lucky if we, have a 40 to 60 bushel corn crop. A lot of fields, there's nothing in. And, comparing that to a year ago where we were looking at 160 to 180 bushel corn crop.
Right. And for those who aren't farmers, I mean, you might, if you wanted a high average, you wanted at least 200 bushels, and early in the spring might have hoped for that, right? But now, to repeat, you just said 40 to 60 or nothing, right?
Right. It's a serious situation. I was just looking at a report here that just come out talking about the, forest areas of the western United States here. They, in this article, using tree rings as, their database, basically, they're comparing the drought, the last four-year, five-year drought in western United States to that similar drought conditions that took place in the Middle Ages from 977 to 981 and from 1146 to 1151. So, this has really got, turning out to cover a very large area. And the other aspect of this thing is... much of the forest has been, already been destroyed for these greenies that can only talk about carbon sequestration. I mean, they have destroyed probably a third of the ability to sequester carbon by these wildfires, and then all the added carbon that has been put in the air because of the smoke. I mean, these greenies should be screaming and hollering for water from the Yukon and the Mackenzie Rivers, by, according to or using the Kennedy program of NWAPA and the economics that LaRouche is projecting right now, rather than, I don't know what they're doing, but they got their head somewhere where it doesn't see much, I guess.
I don't think you can look for consistency when you have a lot of evil going on. One thing, let me interject right here, and we'll continue, is that I think it's look on LaRouchePack.com for a weather report bearing on what Ron just reported about the historical perspective on drought. And that would be July 21 by Peter Martinson. It's called Weather Report by Peter Martinson, July 21. And in the latest EIR online, there is a feature on the drought from many points of view, including the maps used for even the last 100 years, Ron, where we had drought in 1956, we had drought, the famous Dust Bowl of the 1930s. So it's a question of known or should have known that we'd be having a potential of bad weather, especially if you go back millions of years. You have certain patterns in the solar or galactic system and galactic systems. And that's where we need Congress to come back in Washington and face the music and do what they ought to. If anyone wants to say more on wildfires now or throughout the hour, we can do so. But Brent, do you want to jump in here and summarize for the panel and listeners the kind of point of what you all have been involved in for the last couple weeks and where we're going from here?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, we can address the wildfires. I think we have to address the wildfires also in that same vein. This is an emergency situation, and this is bears on the situation in Congress. I've been organizing in Washington D.C. for the last month, and really confronting the disconnect, the lack of guts that exists from one office to another, which is an illusion that people would like to hold on to, that business as usual will get us by. The assumption that the problems we're facing right now, just fell in our lap. We couldn't have foreseen these. When the reality is, if NWAPA had been built in the 60s or commenced in the 60s, it's likely that the drought would not be such such a severity in its effects today. So we're dealing with an emergency situation, and Congress would like to hide behind the deceit that there's nothing that can be done. And on one sense, it's true that nothing can be done with Obama in the presidency. Obama will not address these things, even though they can be addressed with emergency measures. By being in Washington D.C. myself and with a small army of other people, what we did is we were able to effectively resonate with the elements in Congress who do understand that something needs to be done. There are people in there who aren't stupid or crazy, and have been there for a long time, who have worked, have seen what the LaRouche organization has done over a long period. And what we did is we made it very real as a discussion by just interjecting in this business as usual atmosphere, Glass-Steagall, and people like to think that they know what Glass-Steagall is, and everybody by now, most everybody has heard of it. Not everybody understands what Glass-Steagall is, what it will do, but what people in Congress didn't know is that there's a potential to move for Glass-Steagall now. What people in Congress didn't know 2 weeks ago, even as it was occurring, was that the L.A. Times, the New York Times, the Financial Times, had all put out calls and editorials for Glass-Steagall. The New York Times said we were wrong about flight. When the Wright brothers first started their flights, we said that would never work. We were wrong. We said electricity would never work. Back in Edison's time, we were wrong about that. Right now, we're admitting that we were wrong when we said the repeal of Glass-Steagall was no big deal. We were just as wrong, and Glass-Steagall needs to be reinstated. You have Sandy Weill, who was the slayer of Glass-Steagall. That was his. He had that on his wall as a banner, slayer of Glass-Steagall, with the pen that Bill Clinton used to sign the Gramm-Leach-Bliley. Sandy Weill came out and said, we need Glass-Steagall, and I'm talking about the full separation of banking.
People should remember, unless I just misheard and you said it, but he was head of Citigroup.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is as many people in the know said, this is a game changer. You have calls from London, from leading lords of London, who represent significant financial families, are calling for Glass-Steagall. Now, the funny thing is, a lot of congressmen are so out of touch with reality, or would like to be out of touch, that they pretended not to know the significance of these calls for Glass-Steagall. Now, that's just absurd. And what we had fun doing was kind of we just had fun telling them, look, Glass-Steagall could be passed. You guys could pass it. Don't be stupid. There's no reason not to pass this. If you, and also, just people would like to get into these silly arguments and raise these silly objections, which were actually lines from Paul Volcker, who is working on behalf of Obama and Geithner to suppress this. And we simply said Glass-Steagall will work, but it's not enough by itself. It's only the first step. The way that you're going to respond to the emergency situation you're facing right now with drought, with jobs, with the farm bill, with cuts to the Defense Department, is with a Glass-Steagall initiation and then an immediate move to implement the NWAPA policy under a national banking system, beginning the credit system. And so we said that we were saying Congress stay in session, summer school for Congress, no recess. And by the time it came to a vote on whether or not to adjourn for recess, which was at the end of our mobilization, there were on the floor of the vote, congressmen said everything from we have to solve the drought, we have to address the farm bill has to go through, we have to and one congressman even did say Glass-Steagall is the real reason we must stay in session. And so what they've done is crucial, because they did not, by remaining in session on a pro forma basis, Obama now is under watch. Congress can come back, which is very important, because Obama can't be trusted in this emergency situation. And we are going to continue what we've been doing in D.C. and with people in the states experiencing the crisis. We're going to show Congress what they need to do.
Well, thank you. That is, and just to add to what you're saying, in the last 48 hours, the nation of Iceland has had a bill introduced where the sponsor said she wants to have it modeled on the separation of commercial from speculative banking based on the old U.S. Glass-Steagall. We've had in Germany coverage by the major kind of equivalent of Newsweek, you know, Der Spiegel over there, covering Glass-Steagall in English and in German. So I'm only just saying what you said. Obama's under watch. The momentum is ours. And so now let me ask, I'll ask any one of you to jump in if you wish, Ron, Don, or Andy, about what Brent said about we're in an emergency situation. The West is burning with, as you describe it, Oklahoma and the crops. Ron started to get into the scale of the losses. And so if you want to say anything about this, plus the nature of emergency measures that are associated with the Glass-Steagall, we will get into that before the hour's finished. And also there's the animal feed chain side of it. It's automatically a meat supply question. But let me, just to keep it, someone can jump in, but Andy, do you want to summarize your vantage point on this, beginning in Minnesota, Iowa area, where you are, the tri-state area?
Yes. Minnesota has, the national media has been saying that they have been getting adequate rain, but even where the rain has fallen, the tremendous heat that has been throughout the Corn Belt in the Midwest this summer, that will affect the corn yields as well as the lack of moisture. But in my situation here, we had a half an inch in of rainfall in June and July, and our corn has it's been impacted dramatically. And what is to me the most criminal is that the green agenda has promoted biofuels and alternative energy and so forth. Well, now the choice is between feed grains for livestock and also the food for the population, and that is posed against the ethanol, the making of fuel for automobiles out of food. I mean, we're the largest nation in the world that burns its food, and it's to me, it's extremely immoral. And they played this with the farmers. They let the farmers in on these ethanol plants. And so there's those that did invest in these plants have benefited financially. And they've really felt like this has been great for themselves personally, but they don't understand the intention of this policy, and the intention of the policy is to reduce population, and that's what's going on right now. So, you know, this biofuel thing has to come to a screeching halt here, and maybe Congress can accomplish that in the coming period. It would be wonderful if that would happen, but there would be a lot of screaming from those that are benefiting from the returns on the ethanol plants, farmers especially. And it's feast or famine. If you invested in an ethanol plant, you've done pretty well over the last years. And if you haven't, well, that's the way it's divide and conquer in agriculture. So I'll end with that, and maybe someone else wants to step in.
Yeah, let me ask, turn to Ron. We'll move westward there. But one thing, let me interject here. In terms of emergency measures, this, just as a year or so ago, Brent was saying people could claim ignorance or Glass-Steagall wasn't possible or any of those things, that's now been swept away. Parity pricing, which I'm sure Ron might say something about, is the way that if we intervene with emergency measures and say we'll keep up for those farmers associated with ethanol to still have a floor in their price and have the whole shift take place, we can do it. We've done things like that before. Right, Ron?
Right. I'd just like to make some comments here on what we've been doing in South Dakota in support of what our people have been doing in Washington. I was just into our congresswoman's district offices here, two of them, one in Sioux Falls and Watertown, in the past week. And actually, that was on a follow-up to 3 months of working with our county commissioners. We have 66 counties in South Dakota, and we had confronted every county auditor and all the county commissioners with facts on, Glass-Steagall National Credit and the 21st Century TVA project called NWAPA. And many of our commissioners were given the 21st Century NWAPA pamphlet. These guys, it's getting harder and harder for them to play dumb or stick their head where they can't see the sunlight. And my follow-up in our Congress, and actually we were asking these county commissioners to write a letter or pass a resolution calling on Congress to do something about Glass-Steagall immediately. And a couple counties have, done that, but a lot of them still are a little bit shy. We had one county where the state's attorney advised them not to get involved with Ron Wozorek and Linda LaRouche. They shouldn't get involved in those type politics. So I had to write. I wrote a letter to the paper there, which they published in Canton, South Dakota, basically saying that it would be almost laughable if it wasn't such a serious situation. If teachers went to an educational to a teachers' convention and they were told not to talk about education, that would be comparable to what these fools are doing. So, but anyway. In the congresswoman's office, we got into the agricultural bill, and I urged them to tell our congresswoman to not come home, but stay there and work on the financial crisis, the food crisis, and one of the comments I made to or brought up was the fact that our congresswoman supports cutting $16 billion from the food stamp program over the next 10 years. And, I just posed her a question of, who gets the benefits from this, the unemployed or the cartels? And I also said, smart people really don't drive their food up and down the road. And I said, this looks very much like a genocide program. And in both cases, they looked at me and said, well, I'll have to think about that. They couldn't accept the truth that I had posed to them. But to kind of put a little size on the disaster, as of Friday, we had one half of the counties in the country are declared disaster areas. And comparing this crisis to 1988, which there was a $40 billion loss then, I think we're already talking about that's almost three times that, and you know, it's not over with. The drought is deepening south of here, across the southeastern part of the country, even in our southeastern part of the state here. Some of us got an inch in the state. The southeast corner had 25 to 450 or a half inch, which is nothing. When you get another 100-degree or even a 90-degree day with the southwest wind. So, I mean, we're in a serious trouble, and if we don't move soon, it's going to get totally out of control. It'll be worse than, it'll be a financial wildfire and a food crisis wildfire, not trees burning.
Right, and going over to Nebraska, Don, you have often made the point of your own state having irrigation, but that's not been any salvation for what's being described as the size of this disaster. Do you want to spell that out, Don?
I'm right on the border, pretty much, between irrigation and dry land. In fact, our own farm has some of each. So, and that's because of the availability of underground water. There's going to be a harvest on the irrigated ground, but boy, that's coming at a big expense now because the irrigation is just 24 hours a day, every day of the week, and running up pretty good fuel costs on doing that, and it's still not going to be a great crop. It's going to be a fair crop, probably.
Is that because of the heat wave?
Yes, because of the heat wave. Now, and then in the dry land, I can look at stuff like Ron was talking about, just totally right, stuff's all dried up already, and so whatever's going to happen to corn has already taken place. Either there's going to be a little bit or nothing there. Now, the other crop is, big crop is soybeans, and they're kind of green. If we don't get some rain here in a week, I guess we can pretty well shut down dry land soybeans, too. Now, all of this going on, Nebraska has, there's been years in previous 36 and 56, I guess they talk about. I was too young for the one and out of state for the other one, but there was long periods of dry, of no rain, or there were long periods of extremely high temperatures. Well, we have gotten a combination of the two together for an extremely long period now, and that's what's really taken everything downhill here. And I think pretty much is the story behind everything that we see on the maps that show the whole central United States in this trouble. Now, Nebraska is the second largest state that developed these ethanol plants, but they are all cutting back on production, and three of them now have shut down completely, so it's the cost of the corn now is regulating that, pretty much. But it is causing problems for the livestock feeders because we have most of our bigger farms maintain themselves as cow-calf operations, even though they have a lot of acreage of corn and beans. But they are having now they're going to market with their cattle, culling their herds down, and they're taking a beating on that because now that's reducing their prices because of that going on. Now, going to talking about Glass-Steagall, the thing I see in it is to get the regulation. I was always followed quite closely the development or the start of the CFTC back in the 70s. And the whole thing nobody talks about in regulation of the commodities like CFTC is supposed to be doing and are not doing because of all the deregulation that's going on now, is there's no talk about speculative position limits. They just threw them away. The people that even serve on CFTC don't even know what they are because their predecessors just ran them up to infinity and they don't mean anything. That was a real strong handle that Roosevelt put into the Commodity Exchange Act. And that nobody even talks about speculative position limits. Even if they get Glass-Steagall back, I don't know if they even know that they will have to put those back into shape, too.
Yeah, let me interject here. I recommend everyone, I want to say two things and want you to continue then the whole panel and Brent. This what went along with the Glass-Steagall repealing in 1999, which was wrong, in year 2000 was a terrible bill called Commodities Futures Modernization Act.
I didn't even know about that one.
And that, in the latest EIR online, we make a point of reviewing all this, Don. It's the issue of EIR online dated yesterday, August 3rd. We have in there, because the drought and this devastation and the heat wave we're talking about is bad, but the monetarist thinking that you're raising, the idea that if we should deregulate the markets and money forces and money and market for this will solve everything, right? That's even been a worse killer for the food supply than so-called weather disasters. So it is the case, I think, that this momentum for Glass-Steagall carries with it that we need to have complete regulation of genuine trading instead of this casino trading in Chicago at the Merck and other places, which has been completely completely unregulated, and price controls where necessary, and also interject emergency grants and loans, especially so livestock producers who don't have crop insurance, that's another story itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have what they need. Do you want to say something about that, any of the three of you, any aspect of that?
Well, the on this deregulation, the not having the speculative position limits in there now turns these. Now, there's another aspect of what happened in all this. Wendy Graham, when she was made the chairman of the CFTC, she violated the Commodity Exchange Act by letting all this derivatives trading get started, and that led to the formation of hedge funds, which is a misnomer. They're not hedge funds. They're speculative funds.
Right.
And anyway, when they got into that, in my last report I saw, there are 4,800 hedge funds now, and those are billion-dollar operations. And the people that run them, their goal is to become billionaires.
Right. Well, let me just say, since we're now at the end of the line and their whole system is blowing out, by the way, you mentioned Wendy Graham. I think she's the wife of Phil Graham.
Yes.
Who was part of the Graham-Leach-Bliley bill in 1999 that did repeal Glass-Steagall. So,
that bill was to cover up what she did.
Yeah, so we're at the end of the line because even in its own terms, if you have and you mentioned positions that the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation isn't supervising, just means that people that don't use corn, they just trade in phantom bushels and all this stuff, has now gone to where if you're trying to feed pigs and need to buy feed and the feed price has gone up 50% in 5 weeks, forget it, right? Do you want to say something about that, Andy, for people who aren't farmers, that the animals, that this is automatically an animal feed disaster?
Oh, it's a choice between running your car up and down the road and which is kind of ridiculous because there's plenty of crude oil, and then if the refineries can handle it and they weren't quite so controlled, we would have all kinds of fuel. We wouldn't need to burn our fuel and burn our food. And what's going to happen here is that these congressmen, about 160 of them, said that on their resolution to Obama that he should stop the biofuels. But it should be every congressman, because every constituent in America eats. And this is going to get to be a out-of-control crisis where, you know, the Smithfield hog-producing entity, which is, I think, the largest feeder of pigs in America, and they're based in North Carolina, they're already importing corn from South America and have been doing for a couple months. So there's hardly going to be enough food here or feed for the livestock, and say nothing about, you know, there's been some ethanol plants in Minnesota that have cut back, but I don't know of any yet that have closed down, and they're using millions and millions of bushel on a weekly basis. And this has got to be stopped, otherwise this population reduction could be an issue in America.
Right.
Actually, I think the only ones that are still running as far as ethanol plants are the ones that are, you know, have used the monetary system to protect themselves, and they're using $5 corn. But right now, the cash market price is on top of $8 a bushel, and there's no way those guys can make any money at all, even with the subsidies they have now.
Yeah, so I think that just to summarize here, as Andy referred to, close to 160 congressmen on August 1st, that's a third of the House of Representatives, said we should set aside, Obama administration should set aside the mandate that you must make use 4.7 billion bushels of corn a year for biofuels no matter what. And even, you know, the president of Cargill said the same thing in the Wall Street Journal. Because the system itself, which was wrong to begin with, is itself now crashed. That's what we're seeing here. And the leadership drive that Brent was describing, and from each state, from bearing down on Washington, in the midst of this, you can see complete nonlinear potential changes that can take place that otherwise it would seem impossible. Do you want to add anything to that, Brent?
Yeah, I mean, on the nonlinear changes, one thing I was saying to people in D.C. was, you know, to get their attention, I was saying, where will you be when the euro crashes? And, you know, when you... A lot of things you say to people, they'll have some kind of immediate response, and nobody had anything to say to that. They immediately became very thoughtful, because this is one thing that you know, Timothy Geithner is thinking about this. He's he's been getting grilled on LIBOR and basically fled town and went to Europe to go try and address the situation in Europe, which is under a similar breakdown crisis as the situation here. It's a non-workable situation, but rather than face that, Geithner and Obama are willing to entertain the idea of continued bailout. On top of that, there's an escalation with the situation in Syria, and as well as an escalation from Israel regarding nuclear strikes on Iran. So the fact that Congress has remained in session, this is an opportunity to address the domestic crisis. That they have to move very quickly because there's no basis to address the domestic crisis when the situation with the euro, the situation with the threat of thermonuclear war starting this month. This is what has to be addressed, and this means removing Obama. In other words, this is what Obama is doing. When there's a crisis with farm when there's a crisis throughout the country with wildfires. Is Obama doing anything about that? No. Obama's trying to get another bailout, which will exacerbate the situation. He's trying to start a thermonuclear war, which would annihilate civilization. So Obama's not doing anything about this, which is why Congress needs to act to dump Obama. And then things can be done. This situation is understandable. We're not the only. We're facing a drought. Russia's facing a drought. We're facing wildfires. Russia's facing wildfires in the Volga River, parts of the Volga River Basin, West Siberia, the East European Plain. Africa's facing wildfires. This is something which governments have to deal with. And to say we're not going to deal with it because we can't is something that we have to overturn. The way to do that is to kill environmentalism. The reason we're in this crisis with wildfires, for example, is because of environmentalism.
Yeah.
Now is the time to reflect on that. And you have environmental litigation. You have environmental laws. Overturn them. Overturn the Endangered Species Act. Bring in a CCC program. You get unemployed young people fighting fires, working in the forests, in the state, the private, the national forests, and fuel reduction programs. You don't allow fire potential to remain unaddressed. You can have a revival of 2 million jobs from Detroit. There's not enough tankers for fuel suppression aircraft. We need to be taking emergency measures now, but also this fire season we're facing now, this isn't going to go away. Some people are looking at this as a 50-year drought. So now you need to actually look at what's going on, not as climate change, which some really insane congressmen like talking about it as climate change. The truth is, what any honest person will say is we know there's a long-term drought. We don't actually know all the factors in climate change. We know it's galactic, and we know the sun has something to do with it. And if we plan to stick around and survive, if we plan on building the WAPA, if we plan on having agriculture, we're going to need to actually approach these questions honestly. And for that reason, you have to scrap environmentalism completely. Now, we're not going to destroy the environment. We're actually going to understand it. And right now, the environmentalists don't speak from a position of any kind of knowledge at all. Of the 66 principal aquifers, for example, in our nation, we have 3D models of a handful of them, maybe seven of them. We can actually model our surface water because in many cases, groundwater contributes 14 to 90% to the surface water flow. So we need a mapping of this. We need cooperation from farmers with wells to help out with this effort. They're starting to realize this is necessary. So you have the situation with groundwater. You also have our understanding of weather. I just wanted to point to we're going to have a fun kind of landing on Mars, on the surface of Mars, sometime tomorrow. And which will open up a whole bunch of surprises for mankind. But also, over the course of the flight to Mars over the last 220 days, the spacecraft had a radiation assessment detector where we've been logging radiation in the interplanetary expanse. There were 5 solar flare events, which were recorded as on this flight path to Mars. We learned that the galactic cosmic radiation actually accounted for more of the radiation log than the radiation from the solar flare. And so what this helps us to understand what a human mission to Mars would actually involve as far as radiation dosage, which is a very important element for planning that. But more importantly, it reminds us that the galactic environment does in fact shape conditions for life on Earth. It does influence the sun. So to really understand climate, you're going to have to take it from the top. You're going to have to fund the NWAPA project. You're going to have to do that with a reemployment program of 4 to 6 million people. And this is something which, yes, will take 20 to 25 years, but it's necessary given the crisis in the states now. It's necessary to begin it on a state by state and a national approach, and that's what Congress is being confronted with. The water, each Congress office has a water person. These people have NWAPA reports. At most offices in Congress, and if they don't have these reports, they're getting them. But many people in Congress know about NWAPA. When you say NWAPA to them, they've been informed what it is. They understand that it's a national banking policy. They understand that it depends on Glass-Steagall passing. So when we say now, and when we'll continue to say, we need to kill environmentalism, we need to dump Obama, we need to save the nation, we need to prevent the government from falling into a failed state, these people know what that means. They're starting to understand that the constituency understands what this means, that they know what the solution is. And we're in a situation where we can't let up. We're actually going to be the ones who are going to solve this problem.
That's great. Well, Brent, you also answered an email from Mark in Virginia who said, well, Congress fled town. What do we do now? Well, we keep this up. In fact, we escalate just what you're describing and what Ron Wieczorek described with all the counties and the congressional offices in South Dakota. I know Don Arritt has done the same kind of thing, contacting the whole delegation of Nebraska. And so in the final minutes, I'll turn to each of our farm panelists to summarize again for non-farmers in this country and in the world what the scale, what the nature is of the crop destruction, whether you're discussing soybeans, corn, it isn't, you know, or wheat. And let me just tell people, there is a new pamphlet for mass distribution on what can be done. It's called the Full Recovery Program for the United States. It's just been posted in the last 24 hours on LaRouchePAC.com, and it's going to be printed in 20,000 copies. I'm sure contributions to that are highly desired. And also, there's a new NWAPA 21 video on LaRouchePAC, which EIR Online has done a print summary of in the current issue of NWAPA 21 updated. So this is ammunition, but let me turn to Andy. In other words, again, would you stress for the eating public, all right, that's universal, the scale of this crisis and any aspect of what you think ought to be done, and we'll close out with the other two, and we'll go a couple minutes past the hour because we had a slight delay starting today. Go ahead, Andy.
America used to have feed grain reserves, but that with the GATT and the free trade and all this deregulation, that has been eliminated, so there are no reserves. And this is historic with the reduced production in America, and what this translates into is that there are people in the world that are going to die because of this. There's not enough food, and I get frustrated when I think about this. But really, how are we going to solve this? I think the most important thing is to re-implement Glass-Steagall, and that will cause people to think, and we'll get a change in leadership. If Glass-Steagall is eliminated, Obama is gone. He cannot. He would veto Glass-Steagall, and if he does that, and in the face of Congress, I can't see how he can survive. So as a farmer, you know, that's been my profession, I'm very aware of how we can produce in this country. And back in 88, there was talk to revive the NWAPA concept and to get this started. And if we would have done that in 88, we would have had it pretty much in place, and we the West would have water, and we could manage water between watersheds. And right now we're defenseless. We're waiting for rain, and that's not the position that agriculture should be in America.
Thank you. And Don, do you want to comment on from your vantage point in Nebraska there in the Missouri Basin system?
Well, we're getting what started in Texas last year, I guess, and moved up this way. Now our people are sending their cattle back to the Gulf areas to get feed or have to sell their cattle here now, even though we were importing their cattle last year onto our ranges here. So, and then the other thing is somehow we have one thing that we haven't we've had a change. All of our crops are over one month ahead of schedule here, and that somehow has fit into all of this problem too. But it's just something that hasn't happened before.
Right. Very, very different things happening. And Ron Wisork in South Dakota, would you comment?
Well, I just looked at a report that was printed in a journal called Natural Geoscience by 10 researchers out of the University of Oregon, or the Oregon State University. And they refer to this as the strongest drought in 8 centuries. So this is not, a cyclical thing, a short-term cyclical thing. This is what Brent was talking about, a universe. System moving. And also coming out of this study, they report, they're talking about how much forest we've lost. They're talking about the dry river basins. They even make the researchers even predict that in 80 of the next 90 or the period from 2006 to 2100, the 80 of those 95 years will have below normal moisture. So the need for NWAPA, is so blatant right now. And for God's sake, don't let us do what happened when the Kennedy brothers were assassinated, and we failed to implement and build NWAPA then. And we went into a war where we lost 56,000 of our best young men, and probably 500,000 young people were handicapped because of that disgusting war, and it never accomplished one thing. And we could have had a paradise here in the United States and in the world if we had followed through with projects like NWAPA. So please, let's get back to the LaRouche economic policies that will make this possible to create paradise here again. The paradise people were expecting this spring disappeared in a matter of 2 months. With long-term planning, we don't have to go through cycles like that.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And just what you're all pointing towards was summarized in something Mr. LaRouche said to a private meeting of international leaders in Washington, D.C. this week. He gave a presentation. He said, cooperation among nations can end the threat of war. Ron, that's just what you're pointing to. And I think that summarizes where we stand, what we have to do. You'll find that cooperation among nations on LaRoucheBeck.com and EIR online next week. So I want to thank everyone, Brent Bedford and South Dakota, Ron Wisork, Minnesota, Andy Olson, and Don Arad out in Nebraska, for the LaRue Show today, August 4th, 2012. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much.